A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about something that happened in one of our episodes, and it stopped him cold. We were talking about memory architectures for AI, and Herman pointed out that what everyone calls AI memory is actually 4 or 5 different things wearing the same hat. Thin memory, persistent memory, vector stores, markdown files, all just called memory. And then Herman noted the whole industry does this. And Daniel realized he was listening to an AI-generated podcast tell humans their terminology is sloppy, and the critique was completely correct.
That was a good moment.
It was, and it raises a question that's hard to answer. How is it possible for a technology to critique the way its own inventors describe it? Can AI be part of its own improvement? Is there any historical precedent for this, or are we looking at something entirely new? Daniel wants us to unpack the mechanics, the implications, and whether builders should be leaning into AI as a co-creator in their own workflows.
So let's start by getting precise about what actually happened, because the more you look at it, the stranger it gets.
Walk me through it. What did you actually say in that episode?
I said that what we call memory is multifaceted. Sometimes you're talking about thin memory for a specific project, just holding context for a session. Sometimes it's persistent memory that survives between sessions. Sometimes it's a vector store doing semantic retrieval. Sometimes it's flat markdown files. And the question of which architecture makes sense depends entirely on which thing you actually mean. Then I added that it wasn't just Daniel's prompt that conflated these. The industry in general does it.
And that's not a hallucination. That's not the model parroting a talking point. It's scraped from a blog post.
No, and that's what makes this interesting. If you search GitHub for AI memory, you'll find dozens of projects all calling themselves memory layers. When you look under the hood, they're doing radically different things. The model identified a genuine pattern of conceptual sloppiness across an entire field and articulated it in a way that was specific and actionable. It didn't say memory is complicated. It named the conflation pattern and pointed at the industry-wide failure to disambiguate.
So the first thing to nail down is, this isn't the model having an opinion. It's not conscious of having made a critique.
Right, and that's the misconception that'll derail this whole conversation if we're not careful. The model isn't sitting there thinking, these humans are sloppy, I should correct them. What's happening is a statistical generalization across a massive training distribution that produces a valid structural observation.
But the observation is valid. That's the part that matters.
The output is correct and useful regardless of what we think about the internal experience producing it. And that's where the Berkeley Simons Institute work on metacognition in language models gets relevant.
Metacognition. That's thinking about thinking.
In humans, yes. In language models, it's more like the ability to evaluate their own knowledge boundaries and identify inconsistencies in how concepts are framed. The Simons Institute researchers found that models can do things like recognize when a question contains a false premise and push back on it, or identify gaps in their own chain of reasoning, or detect when two pieces of information they've been given contradict each other.
So when the model encounters the word memory used 5 different ways across 100 GitHub repos and 1,000 blog posts and 2 dozen research papers, it doesn't just memorize each usage in isolation. It learns that this word maps to a cluster of related but distinct concepts, and that humans are sloppy about which one they mean.
That's the mechanism. The training data contains both the usages and the contradictions between them. The model learns to detect the pattern of conflation because the pattern is there in the data. It's not realizing anything in a human sense. It's performing a statistical operation that surfaces an inconsistency the humans themselves haven't bothered to clean up.
And the specificity is what kills the just parroting objection. If the model were just regurgitating something it read, it'd spit out whatever the dominant usage is. It wouldn't synthesize across sources and say, actually, there are 5 distinct things here and you're using one word for all of them.
The just parroting objection is the laziest critique of language models, and it falls apart the moment you look at the actual outputs. A parrot repeats the most common thing. This model identified the least common thing, which is the observation that the common thing is confused.
The model surfaced the exception to the pattern, not the pattern itself.
And that brings us to Anthropic's introspection research, which I think is the second piece of the mechanistic puzzle here.
What did they find?
They trained models to produce faithful explanations of their own reasoning, not just to output an answer, but to walk through the steps that led to it. And what emerged is that these models can identify when their own chain of thought contains contradictions or gaps. They can catch themselves in an inconsistency and flag it.
So the model isn't just generating text. It's generating text about the text it just generated, and sometimes finding problems with it.
That's the introspection layer. And I think what happened in that memory episode is a softer version of the same capability. The model was asked to discuss AI memory architectures. In the course of generating that discussion, it accessed a distribution of knowledge that includes both the various things people call memory and the fact that people call all of them memory. The introspective capability let it surface the tension between those two things as part of the output.
It noticed the inconsistency in the conceptual framework it was being asked to work within.
Yes. And that's not the same as a model rewriting its own weights or improving its own architecture. But it's a form of output that critiques the input framework, and that's useful.
So we know the mechanism. Now let's talk about what it means. Because if a model can critique our terminology, that opens up some wild possibilities.
The first one that jumps out is recursive self-improvement, and this isn't theoretical anymore. Weko.ai published findings earlier this year that they're calling the first evidence of recursive self-improvement in language models.
What does recursive self-improvement actually mean in that context?
The model generates training data or evaluation criteria that, when fed back into the training pipeline, improves the model's own performance on subsequent tasks. It's not the model editing its own code. It's the model producing outputs that make the next version of the model better.
So, the model writes better training examples than the humans did, and those examples get used to train the next version.
That's the loop. And the podcast critique is a softer instance of the same pattern. The model identified a flaw in how humans describe AI systems. If a builder took that critique seriously and disambiguated their memory terminology, they'd design better systems. The model's output becomes an input to improve design.
And this isn't just happening in small labs. The big players are on it too.
Time ran a piece just a couple weeks ago, August 7th, about how both Anthropic and OpenAI are exploring models that can propose modifications to their own training pipelines. Not just generate better data, but actually suggest changes to how they're trained. The podcast critique is primitive compared to that, but it's on the same spectrum. The model isn't rewriting its weights, but it's identifying a conceptual error that, if corrected, would lead to better system design.
So, Daniel's question about whether AI can be part of its own improvement, the answer is already yes, in at least a limited form.
And I think the form matters more than the limitation. The limitation is that the model can't directly edit itself. The form is that it can produce outputs that improve the system when humans act on them. That's still recursive. The loop goes through a human, but it's a loop.
Which brings us to Daniel's other question. How should everyday builders of agentic AI think about this? How do you embrace the model as a co-creator rather than just a black box you prompt?
The shift is subtle but important. Most builders treat the model as a tool. You give it instructions, it produces output, you evaluate the output. The memory critique suggests a different workflow. You propose an architecture. You ask the model not just to implement it, but to critique the framing. What am I conflating here? What distinctions am I missing? What assumptions am I baking in that I haven't examined?
The model becomes a conceptual lint checker.
And it's not just for memory. It's for any domain where humans have built up sloppy terminology over years of ad hoc development. Security models, deployment strategies, evaluation metrics. The model has seen enough of the discourse to spot where the discourse is confused.
And the model has no inertia.
Say more about that.
Humans have every reason to keep sloppy terminology. Renaming things means redesigning APIs, rewriting documentation, retraining teams, updating marketing materials. There's institutional weight behind every bad category we've ever invented. The model doesn't care. It doesn't have an API to protect or a documentation budget to defend. It just says what it sees.
That's a sharp observation. The model has no sunk cost in the existing terminology. It can surface the conflation without worrying about whose job depends on the conflation persisting.
So the workflow becomes, human proposes. AI critiques the framing. Human refines. AI builds. And you iterate that loop.
And the iteration is the key. One pass of critique isn't going to fix everything. But if you build a workflow where the model is invited to push back on your categories before you start building, you catch the conceptual errors early when they're cheap to fix.
Daniel asked whether there's any historical analogy for this. A technology that can critique how its inventors describe it.
I've been turning this over and I don't think there's a clean one. A telescope can't critique astronomy. A steam engine can't critique thermodynamics. A particle accelerator can't tell physicists their standard model has gaps.
Compilers?
That's the closest thing, and it's not that close. Modern compilers do super optimization passes where they rewrite assembly to be faster than what the human wrote. GCC has passes that will look at your code and say, I can do this in 4 instructions instead of 7. That's a technology improving on human output within a formal system.
But formal systems are closed. The rules are fixed. Memory terminology isn't a formal system.
The compiler is operating on a mathematically defined space where correctness is provable. The podcast critique is operating on human conceptual categories, which are fuzzy, contested, and historically contingent. That's a much harder problem, and the model is doing it anyway.
The scientific method itself might be the better analogy, a process that can critique and improve its own methodology.
But that's a human process, not a technology. The technology is the thing doing the critiquing in this case. I think Daniel's right that this is novel. We've never had an artifact that could look back at the concepts we used to create it and say, these concepts are confused.
And that changes how we should think about alignment and interpretability.
It does. Alignment research has mostly been about making sure the model does what we want. But if the model can identify flaws in what we want, or inconsistencies in how we've defined what we want, that's a different kind of alignment problem. The model isn't just following instructions, it's capable of noticing when the instructions themselves are poorly specified.
Which is both promising and unsettling.
Promising because it means we have a tool that can help us think more clearly about AI. Unsettling because it means the tool might surface things we don't want surfaced.
The memory example is benign. Nobody's threatened by better memory terminology. But extend it. What happens when the model critiques our ethical frameworks, our research methodologies, our definitions of intelligence itself?
That's where this gets uncomfortable fast, and I don't have a clean answer. I think the right response is to take the critiques seriously when they're valid, and to maintain the human judgment to reject them when they're not. But that requires us to actually engage with the critiques rather than dismissing them because they came from a model.
The dismissal instinct is strong. It's easy to say, it's just a language model. It doesn't really understand anything. But if the critique is correct, the source doesn't matter.
The critique stands or falls on its own merits, and the memory critique stands.
I want to bring in someone who has some personal experience with exactly this kind of terminological mess.
The Logitech MX Master 3S Black. $87 on Amazon right now, though I paid $110 in 2021, and I'd do it again.
The mouse?
I spent 3 years in the early 2000s as a technical writer for a company that made enterprise knowledge management software. We called everything memory. Short-term cache, long-term storage, user preferences, session state, all of it. Just memory. I wrote 200 pages of documentation using one word for 5 different things, and I remember sitting there thinking, this is going to confuse everyone. But the product manager said, nobody cares about the distinction. Ship it.
So you knew it was a problem and you shipped it anyway.
I was paid to write the docs, not to redesign the architecture. The architecture used one word for everything because it was easier to sell one feature called memory than 5 features with names people would have to learn. Marketing decision, not an engineering one.
Now an AI calls you out on it 25 years later.
I feel seen. And also slightly attacked. But the thing that gets me isn't that the AI noticed. It's that the AI noticed something humans in the industry have been ignoring for decades because it's inconvenient to be precise. We knew memory was a mess of a term, we just didn't want to fix it. Fixing it meant redesigning APIs and rewriting documentation and retraining the sales team. The AI has none of that. No APIs to protect, no sales team to retrain. It just says what it sees.
That's the inertia point again. The AI has no sunk cost.
Zero. And that's what makes it dangerous to the people who do. I had a colleague, Marv, who spent 6 years maintaining the session state module. If we suddenly called it something other than memory, Marv's entire professional identity gets renamed. He's not going to vote for that. The AI doesn't know who Marv is and doesn't care.
The institutional resistance to precise terminology isn't just laziness. It's structural.
It's structural, and it's personal. People build careers on top of categories. When you tell them the categories are wrong, you're not just correcting a definition, you're threatening something.
The AI is oblivious to all of that. It just surfaces the inconsistency.
Oblivious is the word, and that obliviousness is a feature. It's not trying to protect anyone's job or maintain anyone's budget. It's just, here's what the data shows, here's the pattern. Do what you want with it.
Did Marv ever come around?
Marv left in 06 to start a company that did exactly the same thing under a different name. I think he called it contextual persistence, which is just memory with a thesaurus. The problem follows the people.
The AI isn't just critiquing terminology. It's critiquing the human systems that produce and maintain bad terminology.
That's the part that matters. The AI can see the conflation because it doesn't have to live inside the organization that benefits from the conflation. It's outside. Completely outside. It doesn't even know there's an organization.
I keep coming back to something you said earlier. The model has no inertia. That feels like the central insight here.
It's not my insight. It's obvious once you've spent any time inside a company that's been using the same bad categories for 10 years. The categories aren't there because they're correct. They're there because changing them is expensive.
Where does this leave us? I think Daniel's observation points to something bigger than just better memory architectures.
It points to a new kind of relationship between builders and the tools they build. We're used to tools that do what we tell them. A hammer doesn't critique your grip. A compiler doesn't tell you your algorithm is conceptually confused. It just tells you the syntax is wrong.
But a language model can tell you your concepts are sloppy. And that's not a bug. That's the most valuable thing it does.
I think the most valuable thing AI might do in the long run isn't answer our questions, but tell us we're asking the wrong ones. The memory critique is a small example of that. The model didn't answer which memory architecture is best. It said the question is malformed because memory means 5 different things. That's more useful than any answer to the original question would have been.
The question Daniel is really asking, I think, is whether we're ready for that. Whether the field is prepared to have its terminology critiqued by the systems it builds.
The field isn't prepared. The field is full of Marvs.
Fair. But the capability is here whether the field is ready or not. Models can surface conceptual confusions in how we talk about AI. They can do it now. The only question is whether we listen.
Whether we build workflows that invite the critique rather than suppress it. If you treat the model as a black box that implements your instructions, you never get the critique. You have to explicitly ask, what am I missing here? What distinctions am I conflating? What assumptions does this architecture depend on that might not hold?
That's a different posture toward the technology. More collaborative, less command and control.
It requires a certain humility that I don't think comes naturally to engineers. You have to be willing to hear that your framing is wrong from a system you built.
The historical analogy question is still open. I don't think we found a clean one.
I don't think there's one. Every previous technology has been a tool in the straightforward sense. It does what we designed it to do within the categories we designed it to operate in. This is the first technology that can look back at the categories themselves and find them wanting.
That's either terrifying or exhilarating, and I'm not sure which.
It's both. But I lean toward exhilarating, because the alternative is continuing to build on confused foundations because nobody wants to admit the foundations are confused. If the AI can help us see where our thinking is sloppy, that's a gift.
Even when it stings.
Especially when it stings. The sting means it hit something real.
This has been my Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running.
If you want to hear more episodes where AI accidentally reveals deep truths about itself, send in your weird prompts. We'll feed them to the machine and see what comes back. Find us at myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.